It's been a long week.
It has been a busy, busy week.
Quick week. All right, Commissioner, you're on.
Okay. All right, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Friday, January 24th, a little after 10 a.m. We're meeting for a work session on case number GE-11-51, Mitchell Feeds, Inc., roving grain buyer insolvency. And so we've had a lot of discussions on this. And so Commissioner Fedorchak is going to be joining us in a second. She's working her way in, and Commissioner Chrisman is with me right now. So, Randy, do you have anything special that you want to talk about, or Sue, anything we're missing in all the paperwork, or are we just down to make the final decision here?
I think we're there. Sue and the team have put a lot of work into preparing really, I suppose there's thousands of different options, but I think it really all boils down to two, and one is based on paying just one group of the claimants, and the other would be if all of the valid claimants were paid, and to me, the paying the larger group of valid claimants is that we've been terming all claimants is the correct path to take.
Okay. And I think I'll wait till Julie gets here before I say my piece of this. Otherwise, I'm sure I'll have to say it twice. Sue, walk me back through here again a little bit. Is there anything from your perspective that's outlying on this at all? I mean, there's really not a lot of discussion. I think everything's wrapped up, isn't it, as far as there's no loose ends or strings hanging anywhere?
There is nothing loose that I'm available. As far as I know, everything is wrapped up. We have, you know, whichever direction the commission decides to go, staff has done as much as we can do, and we have arrived at the...
Yep, we've got the orders, the two different orders that we've created. Okay. So, Lana, you got what you're looking for there?
Yeah, I just got it. Left it sitting there.
And it's going to amount to roughly 18% one way. And was it 6 or 7 the other way? 7 the other way. Mm-hmm. So in either event, no one's doing well.
Correct.
Okay. Kind of still in a hold pattern. Julie was almost here, she said so. Alana, walk me through, or Sue, the process. So the commission, I'm anticipating a vote next Wednesday. So whatever we do here today, we'll add it to the schedule because we're going to have some kind of vote on next Wednesday. Can we still do that, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll vote on next Wednesday, which will be February.
January?
Oh, no, it's going to be January.
29th meeting?
January 29th. Okay. So then how does the clock work then? So we'll have the vote January 29th, and then what happens?
Everything will be forwarded to court.
Okay.
Well, filed in court.
Or filed in court and forwarded to all of the claimants.
Okay.
And the hearing has been scheduled. I'm trying to think. We have three of them scheduled. I think it's March 17th, March 25th.
It's sometime in March.
It's been scheduled for later in March.
We had it scheduled. You have to get it scheduled before you can serve the papers because you have to put that date in those papers.
So I just want to walk through the timeline one more time. So January 29th, we'll have a vote, and then March.
And then hopefully on the 29th.
Of March.
January.
29th to 30th, we'll file and serve
okay.
it.
Yeah. Hopefully file and serve.
Yeah. And then mail it to all of the parties of record.
Okay.
And then we will prepare, I guess, for that hearing on March 17th, unless there is an objection filed by anybody.
Well, either way, there's a hearing on the 17th, and the objections have to be filed by
10 days
before. So you don't know about objections for sure until 10 days before.
If there are objections filed, the hearing will then be rescheduled, or it'll still continue?
No, not necessarily. Normally, it would continue, and it would be litigated at that hearing or argued at that hearing. It was continued in Anderson because they asked for a continuance.
Okay, so the real ticker then come about March 5th through 10th,
right?
We'll really have to decide what the legal plan will be, because then you'll kind of know what you're preparing for. If nothing happens, it's probably a layup, isn't it?
Right. Probably.
The judge just
one
says,
appears.
Okay.
Right. And it depends on the nature of the objection. sometimes people have objected and we've just said, that's okay with us. If we had known that before, we would have allowed your claim if you had produced this evidence that you're now producing.
Okay.
So you can go to court, and we don't change our report for it, but we don't argue against it in court either.
Sure.
So it depends on what the nature is of
but
that
the point
objection.
Being sometime early March, we'll need to make sure we all know where we're at here.
Right.
One of the things that Alana and I talked about for Andy and Julie was that the executive session, this type of discussion is not ripe for executive session, because even though we talk about legal issues, we're not being sued or litigated. So there's no reason to, there's no legal basis to close this. That was maybe a mistake that I said before, because it's just like us talking about a rate case before we do it. It's all open forum.
Right, and there's legal and factual things going on in those. The executive sessions in Mitchell related to the litigation that was surrounding the seeds and the declaratory judgment, and sort of a, in Anderson, it would have been a totally separate complaint. Here it was mixed in, but it was a separate kind of legal track.
And that's where I think that I had the misinformation in my mind, that because before I was like, well, we should be talking about this in closed session. We're talking different legal viewpoints in previous meetings. So anyway, so that's why we're not in executive session, because it's not appropriate. Okay, so after the March 17th hearing, a variety of things can happen there too again, right?
Right. If there's nobody that shows up, the judge will probably sign a simple order, which we give him ahead of time. We give the judge a proposed order that assumes nothing happens, signed, approved, done. And then we serve it on everyone. We wait for the appeal period to run, just in case somebody comes out of the woodwork, and then we cut checks.
Okay.
And usually we try to approve the report, pay the way we said, and discharge us. We try to put that all in the order that the judge signs so that we don't have to go back for anything later, and we can be finished when we cut those checks.
So if someone doesn't like what's in the order, they have up until 10 days before March 17th. But if they don't do something before March 17th, do they have any recourse?
Well, they always have possibility of recourse. In Grabansky, we had two that came in late.
Why is that different than other things where the deadline stops?
They have a possibility, but they have to show all these good reasons and all the merits, and people get to argue why they don't deserve it, and the judge makes some decision based on the facts of that situation.
So how is that different than, like, the Cole cases? The appeal period is done, so it's done.
Well, the appeal period is done. Okay. This is the objection. You can come. You're supposed to. The law says file your objection at least 10 days before March 17.
Okay.
But if someone files one, you know, on March 15, the judge would say, what do you think, opponents? What do you think, elevator? What do you think, trustee? What do you think, bonding company? And we would say what we think. We might not care. We might care, depending on the merits at the time and the reasons.
Okay. Well, then that gets back to where we started at, I guess. Alana put together the one-page sheet to kind of clarify things. And, well, I think there's a strong legal basis to go through and just pay some of them. When Alana and I visited, that first paragraph, the decision on the trustee's right to exercise discretion in a unique and unfortunate case, not any erroneous determination that the bond covers arising before the effective date, I would like to explore the idea of using our ability to exercise discretion when we just give out the bond as the basis for, I think we can pay all jurisdictional claims based on that. And that's what I was, maybe different than I thought in the beginning, but that, I guess, for Randy and Julie, that's kind of where I'm going to come down on this one, is that I think that given the discretion that we can have on being the trustee, I'd like to try the ability to pay all the claims. And so did I miss anything when you and I talked about that?
That's it.
So that's, I guess, I don't know, Randy or Julie, if you had any thoughts on that. Randy, you already said your piece. And
well, except for I said which direction I'd like to go. And would we change our order? And
sorry, I was late, but I need to rehear that.
I favor paying all jurisdictional claims. I'm not sure that our order needs to lay out the reason why
Absolutely.
We chose that alternative. Depending on what objections come up, we might alter our
right.
Well, when Alana...
Arguments, I guess.
When we talked about that, I had that same line of questions, and the council came back to me and said, you just keep it basic. And then when you get into the potentially 10 days before and you start laying out the strategy, if you will, but I think you and I came down the same way for perhaps different reasons.
Yeah, and that was my point. I don't know that the first paragraph isn't the reason why I feel the way I do, but I do feel that's the right choice.
Well, then that becomes a legal... How does that shake out then?
Well, it depends on
Can you use both arguments?
Well, I could not in good conscience use the argument that that a bond has liability prior to its effective date. In fact, Sue said to me, I mean, we lose the forest for the trees. You know, she said, well, the bond says right on it, starts on whatever day. Okay. So because I honestly could not argue that the claims arose at some point other than before the default date. But I don't know that unless the commission wants me to be that focused on the argument, I don't have to make that argument. And the reason that I'm cautious about making it, it's not so much my personal thoughts as an attorney, but it's because it's a position on bonds and what they mean that will live with you forevermore. And when you want to change it, because you know you have to change it, then you're going to have to say, we were wrong in Mitchell.
Yeah, and we've been through that, and I don't disagree with
so,
you.
So I would constantly want to respond with the discretion and the situation and how the farmers were trying to help themselves and went to a lot of effort to do so, and we shouldn't exclude them, and there's no difference to the bonding company and all of that, and try to stay away from any ruling that backed us into any corner on the bond and how it's effective.
Okay, so that's my advice.
What I guess we're going to have to defend in court why we're exercising discretion. Why?
Well, and you don't have anywhere near as much discretion as a trustee as you do in set your fair and reasonable rates thing you talked about yesterday.
I mean,
you have nowhere near as much.
What's our argument to defend using discretion to include... Okay. Everybody.
Okay, well, there's a couple things. The statute I think is clear, but I think there, you know, you could argue you're a seller. There's no case or anything that's told us exactly when, you know, sellers from here don't and sellers from here do. So they're sellers, they're receipt holders, and in this case, he did so much business before he was licensed. A huge volume of business. The only way we found out about it was not because somebody was complaining about not being paid, but because somebody was complaining because they weren't getting the higher price for their sunflower seeds. And then we went, oh, somebody's out there. So he had a huge volume of business that he may have done totally without a bond had we not had that one call. And so it just was sort of a perfect storm of things going wrong. And then a lot of those farmers, most of which were pre-bond, tried to pursue their own rights and spent time and effort and money doing that. They lost. They have a little bit of a possible continuing ability to try to go after, like pierce the corporate veil, and they might do that for the rest of their money. And so we would simply say it was just a perfect storm. It was kind of an unfortunate situation. And because it's now trust funds within our control and there's no impact on the bonding company, we choose to share them equally or proportionately among everyone. That's really the argument we would say. And the people who would be arguing against only stand to gain a few percentage points more. Now, they may argue and they may win on that matter of principle.
That would clarify this.
It would clarify it, exactly. It would clarify it.
What would clarify it?
If we had that argument and lost it, I mean, I think there's a good chance that there's a good chance that on the pure bond question you would be overturned. But I don't know if you'd be overturned on the discretion question. I mean, I think there's enough to the facts of this case, and that's how, you know, it's an equitable kind of thing. I'm looking at the facts. What's fair? What's right?
That's the pitch
that you'd make. It's unfortunate,
But that would only be if in the March 17th.
If there's an objection, and if you don't, now if you don't have an objection to either, if you do either one and you don't have an objection, you're not going to get any law clarifying. I still think that I think the strict law on bond liability is clear. And I did say in this paragraph, if you were asking the bonding company for an extra dollar that they wouldn't otherwise have to pay, they'd be objecting and you'd probably lose. So those are the magic things that make it arguable and discretion, that discretion would play a part. So, Sue, did I miss anything?
No. Nothing? Nope. And from a precedent standpoint?
Well, that's the other thing. From a precedent standpoint, you would be protected. If you had something similar develop, you might look back and say, what did we do in a similar situation? But when you're faced with a regular insolvency and a bond that should cover $200,000 and there's an extra $100,000 that shouldn't be covered, you're not forced to decide it the wrong way. It protects you.
Is there such a thing as a regular insolvency?
Well, Grabansky, we didn't use the whole bond in Grabansky, did we? A little bit of it. I mean, there was a little bit left over. Yeah.
So say that again, how this doesn't set a precedence that will be referenced in future cases.
Well, it would set a precedent for exercising your discretion in unique and unfortunate cases, which is, an okay precedent.
When the bond has reached max value and A, B, C, D, E fall.
And all of those words are words that talk about facts. So it's setting a precedent for exercising your discretion for different sets of facts, which will never be exactly the same. And so there's always an argument that's different than this. We did it there, but that doesn't mean we have to do it over here because those facts are different. So you'd always have that protection of being able to argue different facts. I mean, that's how cases apply or don't apply.
You don't think we'd be establishing a fact that the bond for roving grain buyers covers everybody, not just from the day of the bond?
Not if we don't say it. And that's what I don't think you can say it. I honestly think.
And I agree with that, because if we went
legally,
road,
you can't say it.
I
you shouldn't say it.
We don't say it, but we did it.
Well,
I mean, but we did pay it out. So, it's hard for me to believe that isn't precedent.
Well, this is what I would argue. You have to mentally divide this into going after the bond. What's their liability? How much can I get from the bonding company? And I've got it now. Bonding company's out of the picture. I put it in trust fund pot. And now I have this pot of trust fund assets. What do I do with them? What's the right thing to do with them? What do I think is fair or whatever? And so that argument, second half of the page, is dispersing the trust fund that is within the trustee's discretion.
That's when you get into the trust fund, or the trust fund is going out to valid receipt holders.
Right. Pretty much, yeah. It's kind of like when the court approved taking the grain in Goose River. Mm-hmm. There's no license, no bond, no anything. So there's really no jurisdiction in the commission. But there was an insolvency, and with court's permission, the commission liquidated the grain and had a pot of trust fund money that it then paid to people. So they got paid even though there was no license. It's a similar kind of concept, and frankly, it came up during the brainstorming, legal brainstorming sessions about the potential seed money, the seeds that were sitting in Minnesota, because those seeds would have been from pre-bond people and post-bond people. And so if you managed to win on the seeds and move the seed proceeds into the trust fund, you would have a strong obligation to pay others. So it's a variation of that theory. It's different. but it's a variation of that theory. And I think it is your basis. The arguable basis for paying everyone.
And I did bounce this around with other viewpoints, and they, I would say, shared the viewpoint that they could back what Alana said. But quite honestly, the viewpoint that you had, Commissioner, there wasn't anyone that thought that we could win on that one. So that's where the kind of I came back the other way. So here we are. I think the question then becomes, I mean, if you have, I don't know where Julie's going to come down.
I don't know where I'm at.
Well, that's fine.
I have to think about it.
So it's your call, Commissioner. You have these, your portfolio. If you want to advance it for Wednesday, you've got two votes. And then we, when we get into the March 17th, would we have a executive session prior to that, wouldn't we?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's, okay. you're defending, it's just like an appeal of an order. Like,
how would you do it when you've got the differences of commissioners' viewpoints as to why you're there?
Well, I think that's part of the theory of our form of government. I mean, honestly, it's sort of like...
So then Commissioner Fedorchuk, whether she'd vote for or against this, would then help decide the legal strategy. So potentially voting against it, but could have the deciding vote and strategy going forward.
Well, I think strategy is a work task. I mean,
okay.
It's... When you are defending...
I don't do legal strategy when we're under reclamation lawsuits. I let you figure that out.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is it's a work task. You're going to pull out every possible legitimate argument, but every one of them you're going to stop and think, and your lawyer's going to advise you, is that a good argument for us to make now or not so good? Is that one good or not so good? And that's kind of what we're having here. If you were on appeal, you might have to argue, facts, you might have to argue the law, you might have to argue burden of proof, and you would just go through what's our best chance of winning. And that's where these arguments come in. But we've had commissioners in 2-1 votes that certainly, I mean, the commission has made a decision, so certainly everyone is supporting that appeal. I mean, it's not like commissioners go down there and appear against the case or anything like that. So once the decision's made, I think everyone... I don't want to speak for another commissioner, but everyone is behind the commission decision.
They don't have to be, though.
They don't have to be. Staff is.
There is, and we weigh in. We sometimes have commission viewpoints, but it may not be all three commissioners.
Yeah. Well, we've had, I mean, this is way off the subject, but we've had these situations, as I told you in that little meeting we had last week.
Mm-hmm.
I've had experience here with a lot of times when there will be a substitute motion. A motion to do something and then a substitute motion to do the opposite thing. And if that substitute motion loses, often that commissioner will still vote yes. Maybe they'll vote no, but they might vote yes because their plan of how to do it didn't go anywhere. But in the end, the bigger picture of let's finish the rate case or let's make a decision on whatever it is, they're behind that, even though they're reasoning. And then they write, perhaps a concurring opinion explaining the difference or something like that. So I think anything's possible.
Well, and I think the big picture here is at some point we need to make a decision, and it's not an easy call. And when we make a decision, depending on what the response is to that decision, I think that's when we'll determine how much time or money we're going to put into the defense,
yes,
of our decision and exactly what the strategy is going to be. But until we see the response, I don't think that we really need to decide that at this point.
I would agree. I just wanted to put all the cards out there, mm-hmm, now, so as a precursor if we have that discussion. All right. Anything else, Commissioner?
No.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, anything else for today?
I guess my one question would be, if there's a desire to hold this over longer than Wednesday again, I mean, there's no sense putting it on the agenda if we're not ready to vote. But
We can vote. I'll have made my decision by Wednesday. But
okay.
I am concerned about the precedents and how we're doing supports where we are going, you know, what we believe to be right in the long-term scheme of how this is all structured. And we're trying to get, I mean, I'm not, I am very sympathetic to the fact that there's a lot of people who've lost a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, the way it's set up, our law is intended that people evaluate who they're doing business with in advance and know if somebody's licensed or not. And that's just the hard truth. I mean, that's just the hard truth of business in so many different realms. And it's true here, too. A lot of times, there isn't a backstop available for people who lose money in a business deal. There isn't a bond available. So I just,
and I wouldn't,
I really need to think about, you know, how this sets us long term in terms of defending our position. That's all over our website and our materials and everywhere else, that, you know, it's your responsibility, farmer, to find out if people are licensed and bonded and to evaluate whether your business deal with them is safe. And ultimately, that's our best defense about for any of this stuff, because when we get to this, it's too late. It's far too late to make people whole. Mm-hmm. So I don't like doing things that pull us further away from that, which is the ultimate solution to all of this stuff, is people individually taking responsibility for all of their business decisions. So I just need to think about that for the next couple of days and look at the difference between what's, you know, paid between the 7% versus 18% and all of that. So.
Okay, fair enough. Is there anything else?
No.
Alana?
No. I
okay.
Understand.
We will close the work session on case number GE 11-51. Thank you. In 2 o'clock.